Listened in Milwaukee on Devil Radio 92.7 FM in Madison, WTTN 1580 AM in Columbus, and Waukesha, WAUK 540 AM and 101 FM The Shaw, as well as in Minneapolis, St. Paul on AM 950. It's the Matt McNeil Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Good to have you with us. Once again, I do remind people that you do have a lot of ways you can get in touch with us, and we do enjoy when you do get in touch with us. You can get in touch with us via the phone line 952-946-6205. Comment at am950radio.com is the email. The Twitter page is Matt McNeil Show, at Matt McNeil Show. Progressive Citizen X, Matt McNeil Show on Facebook. And, of course, you can podcast and stream us everywhere. God, technology is great. I got into this business going, I could sit in a room by myself and talk to myself. The reality is now you're all in my life. So, and bon appetit. We got Jeff. Jeff Stein's our national and presidential expert, noted author. You can find his books at your favorite book site, as well as totallyiowa.com. The Iowa Business Report and the Iowa Politics Report come to us from KXEL in Cedar Falls, Waterloo, Iowa. And he's joining us. You're in Des Moines right now, right?
I am. Good afternoon, Matthew. Good. I am in Des Moines at the studios of the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Had some business, some interviews at the state capitol, and didn't want to miss an opportunity to talk to you and the fine folks in Minnesota and Wisconsin.
I mean, in the metro area of the Twin Cities, I miss agricultural radio. I did enjoy that. There was a way for you to, even if you didn't work in agriculture, that you could kind of at least get a feeling of what was going on there. That's what I always loved about it.
Well, if you like to eat, then you need to appreciate the entire agribusiness industry. And trust me, I love to eat.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's all of us. It is a shame, though, I think in the larger metro areas they don't do more of that. I really do think that would be an important thing. Needless to say, a discussion for another day. Hey, did you see what happened in D.C. yesterday? Holy God, man. Your thoughts on the latest January 6th hearing at the Capitol?
Well, what aspect do you want to grab onto? The fact that an individual who's being investigated reportedly was calling witnesses ahead of time, the fact that witnesses were calling back to their former bosses for financial help. I mean, this thing is just, there are no boundaries, are there?
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, Liz Cheney at the very end basically said, we've got word. And I misquoted this in the 3 o'clock hour yesterday, because the way it said it is he tried to call witnesses. He actually tried to contact witnesses is the right term. He was trying to get in touch with one of the witnesses and call them directly, which is textbook, you know, voter intimidation, or not voter, witness intimidation. Mm-hmm. And he was desperately, it's almost so boneheaded you can't even believe that he would even try it. But he did. The individual avoided the call, contacted their lawyer, lawyer contacted the committee contacted the Department of Justice. They're investigating. That alone is a pretty serious charge, correct?
Well, sure. The rules for a congressional hearing are very different than a court of law. But let's say this was a court of law, and I'm a prosecutor, and you are someone we're investigating, and you start calling witnesses that I intend to bring forward to a jury or a commission. That is classic witness tampering in a criminal or civil situation. Different rules for Congress, but in fact, not as stringent as in a criminal or civil case. But you have to assume, and you have documented and discussed various atrocities that you are pointing toward the 45th president as having committed. Has he actually ever been caught, punished, in any way sanctioned for any of them? The answer is no, and that's why he keeps doing it, because there have not been any repercussions as of yet.
And there doesn't seem to be a lot of urgency from Merrick Garland right now, which is interesting, considering the other things we learned yesterday. So,
well, here's the thing with regard to the attorney general. I think at this point he's trying to just sit back and not preempt anything, because if, in fact, this commission is acting independently, the idea is let them do their work, then they can make a referral. I think he does not want to ruin a possible prosecution in advance by doing something premature. That's just a guess on my part as a lawyer, but it makes sense that you just wait till the whole thing plays out, and potentially for the Trump side to fall into a trap again.
You and I talked a few weeks ago about how many people are going to have to fall on swords here. And yesterday it became pretty clear there's going to be a lot of sword falling going on. It might be an Olympic sport after this is all done. the you have the December 14th, the Electoral College meets, Biden's the president. December 18th, the crazies show up at the White House with the executive order to have the military confiscate all election equipment in the country. That doesn't seem fishy, to where White House counsel, before Trump could sign it, ran down there and said, "Where's your evidence?" And they basically admitted, "We don't have the evidence, but are you trying to win or not?" And so then comes out of that the plan to march on the Capitol, which wasn't just organic. It was coordinated. You had on the 21st of December a bunch of Republican politicians meeting at the White House to be the point people in the Capitol on the ground in Congress. You had, you know, Roger Stone and Michael Flynn working with these extremist groups to make sure they were there, who were clearly there not just to protest, but with far more nefarious options. And then what I thought was the really the most damning piece of evidence against Trump was the January 4th memos, where basically he is saying, "I'm going to tell them to march on the Capitol. I'm going to leave it out of the speech because I don't want people to basically talk me out of it." And so it was predetermined, premeditated, that he was going to basically order the angry mob after they riled them up at the on the mall to go attack the Capitol. I mean, it was an attempted overthrow of the government, and they laid it out for the first time, I thought, yesterday. They laid out the entire thing, and yeah, it seems like they have the receipts for it too.
One of the difficult things for defenders of the former president to be able to answer for is that tweet that says, "See you all on January 6th at the Capitol, going to be wild." Well, what are you going to use as a defense? Well, he meant, you know, like wild, kind of hipster 1960s wild. You know, I mean, it's, you have to know the audience. You have to know their relationship with the speaker. It's very difficult to suggest that when the president himself says, "Do this because it's going to be wild." Well, does that alone help explain why the Capitol was breached while the president was still speaking, or people were gathering at the very least? The president's defenders like to point to his speech the day of the 6th, but the speech alone on the 6th was pretty neutral. How did you get all those people there on the 6th, though? Mm-hmm. That's the connection. But yeah, Here's the thing that I have some concerns about, and I'm not suggesting anything other than to say, when you have any member of the committee do an interview and say, "I am going to make sure that person never is president again," why? Why make such a statement? Why get in your own way? I mean, that's the kind of thing that if I'm somebody working with that commission behind the scenes, I would say, "Guys, dummy up and let the hearings speak for themselves."
Well, okay, I'm not gonna take the molehill and turn it into a mountain to try to obscure the Rocky Mountain range we got a view of yesterday, and frankly, I'm gonna call that one out. Don't you know, just because someone says something, don't try to find ways to dismiss the committee, because the reality is you're right. The Trump speech was fairly innocuous until he said, "Go get him." And I'm paraphrasing there. You know, Rudy Giuliani, trial by combat. I mean, there clearly was this movement. But overall, I mean, I think now what you do is you now have the ability and the evidence. I don't think Donald Trump should go and be the president in the sense. I think he should be in jail personally for trying to overthrow the government of the United States. I don't have any problem with that. That doesn't dismiss or diminish, you know, the investigation. And so I'm not going to go down that path. But what I will say is, I think now you definitely have to look at the Department of Defense, the orders to the military, the orders, the reluctance because of the weird jurisdiction issues that DC has with police and how things work there. Mm-hmm. The orders that were coming from the White House on what could and could not happen. Reminder, one of the things that was first pointed out after this is that when Black Lives Matter was protesting in Washington, D.C., it looked like there was, you know, military brigades running up and down the place to try to prevent anything bad from happening. But there was hardly anyone there to stop this campaign. I think that when you look at what exactly happened, I think it's only going to – you're going – like I said, there are going to have to be a heck of a lot of people to fall on swords for Trump to be able to now at this point just be able to say, "I was an innocent victim," which, by the way – can we point out Liz Cheney even approached saying, "This is a 76-year-old man. This isn't an impressionable child. You cannot say that he didn't know what he was doing. He knew exactly what he was doing as it was going on."
Well, again, I'm not equivocating extra commission statements to then obviate anything that came out of the hearing. I'm just simply saying, because you and I have talked about this in a variety of contexts, politicians have a habit of not getting out of their own way. And that's why I made the statement I did with regard to Merrick Garland. There are plenty of folks who would say, there, go get him. But if you're a rational prosecutor, you don't want to skew the case. Similarly, as I say, if you want the audience, and this is why they're doing these hearings in primetime, right, Matt? The whole point is we want the American people to understand A, B, C. I would suggest that you'd be better by just focusing on that. Now, as far as saying that the foreign president is a victim, you suggested a lot of people are going to have to fall on swords. I go back to the fact that to this point, enough people have that nothing has ever happened to him. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying that's going to continue. I'm saying that when you are someone for whom everyone has fallen on their sword, then you don't see anything wrong with your behavior. That doesn't mean there isn't anything wrong. Look at the story that Chris Christie told this week. They had the Supreme Court event for Justice Coney Barrett. Everybody came to the White House. Everybody got COVID afterwards, including Chris Christie, who through his own admission had some comorbidities, namely asthma and obesity. He's very sick in a hospital with COVID. Mm-hmm. President Trump then got COVID. The president called Christie ostensibly to see how he was doing and then said, this is according to Christie, then said, you're not going to blame this on me, are you? And, you know, I mean, there's an attitude and little stories like that just beef the whole thing up that it's hard even for the strongest supporters.
I need a favor, that sort of thing. No, he knows how to say things in a very specific way. But the problem is his, you know, okay, let's run through the swords at this point. Okay. Roger Stone and Michael Flynn. They're both going to have to. All the head of the Oath Keepers, the head of the Proud Boys, the Three Percenters, they're all going to have to fall on swords.
Well, how about Bannon?
And Bannon's in big trouble. We'll talk more about him in a second. But Bannon as well. Now you get to Meadows is going to have to fall on a sword. And it sounds like the Trump White House is starting to look at, can we pin this on Meadows, sort of thing. You have Rudy Giuliani, Sidney Powell, the Overstock guy, whoever that is. Then all the Republicans who were in that meeting on December 21st, especially any of them that asked for a pardon afterwards. They clearly then knew they were doing something illegal. They're going to have to fall on swords. Multiple people, probably the Department of Defense, are going to have to fall on swords. You're getting to the point now where there's so many people now are going to be, you know, implicated in this that the chances of him being able to walk away are pretty slim to none.
I'm not willing to go that far just because of the Teflon track record. You know, I mean,
Teflon? I mean, there's a difference between Obama and Reagan and these guys that have it. It seems like the Republicans have circled the wagons 1,000 times around Trump just to prevent this from happening, and now that's falling apart.
Well, and it's not even the Republicans, it's the inner circle of Trump land. And those are two different things, right? You've got your main Republican Party that simply wanted to have power, and so they jumped on board whoever was in the office. And then you've got those in the inner Trump circle, the ones that are still there, the ones that are still sniffing around for jobs and endorsements, et cetera. So you've got a little bit of a distinction there. But yeah, the inner core of the White House circle, that's what would need to be breached. It's not even a member of Congress, per se. It has to be somebody in that inner circle. And, you know, it would be hard for the former president to deny tweets when he was the one holding the phone, right? I mean, yes. That's one of the hooks, because when we've been talking for years on your program on the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, we've been talking about the fact that people like former attorneys, right, they were the insulation, the plausible deniability. Mm-hmm. Well, how is there plausible deniability when he's the one holding the phone?
Exactly.
And sending out the messages. Blame Covfefe on some aide.
Jeff Stein joining us. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. listening in Madison on Double Radio 92.7 FM in Madison, WTTN 1580 AM in Columbus, Waukesha, WAUK 540 AM and 101 FM, The Shaw, and in Minneapolis, St. Paul on AM 950, The Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein joining us right now. When I saw that he was like I said, that was a miscommunication. Trump had called of witnesses, and I was like, is he trying to call witnesses to the stand? I would like to bring in some character witnesses for me, a Colonel Sanders, a Mayor McCheese, and a Burger King to speak on my behalf.
It doesn't matter what city I'm in, what my video backdrop is on the Facebook feed. Your impressions are – that's what's going to sell this show to this new audience.
Speaking of meaty. All right. Now, it really is remarkable. And like I said, wouldn't you say at least after yesterday, for the first time, this committee did actually say, here's what happened, starting on the 14th of December with the Electoral College, how we got to January 6th. I think – and one thing we should also add is – they all left when Trump told them to leave. Remember that? That was the other thing at the very end. We left because Trump told us to go. It really is incriminating, and it is basically gives us the whole picture of what exactly happened.
Which leads me to say, why didn't they lead with that? Right out of the gate at the first hearing. Don't know. Here's the other thing, though. Your audience, you, me, we pay attention to this. I guarantee you, yesterday's headlines for most people are ignored by 9.1% inflation. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's right. Yes, people can walk and chew gum at the same time. But you're in the middle of summer and it's shiny object season. And so I just suggest not getting too excited about it.
I also think that Roe v. Wade overturning is a planet blocking out the sun. I mean, that one is actually going to have a lot more impact, I think, for many more months to come. I'm not going to deny that. And also, I will say this. There's a lot of Republicans who their defense is that, oh, that's not Bill Barr. That's not Ivanka Trump. Those are body doubles. This is all fake and fraudulent. But you have seen the numbers for Trump start to slide. Now, it wasn't that long ago in the Pac-Man show that was on before us here, he was making the comment that it was only it was like a 40%, or 30% still lead for Trump, but it was down dramatically with DeSantis starting to pick up steam. Do you think enough Republicans would ever turn against Trump to where he wouldn't be the front runner?
Yes, absolutely. Uh-huh. And it just has to do with electability, okay? Because what you've seen in these polls in these early states like New Hampshire and Iowa, you've seen DeSantis stay fairly stable. Trump has dropped with those people moving to undecided. That's the first shift. So, is it possible? Yeah. But what's it going to take? It's really the function of electability. Mm-hmm. Because there are enough suitors in waiting who can say, I'll take the Trump agenda. I will move that forward, but I don't have the Trump baggage. And depending on who that Republican will face, Biden, Harris, candidate of the week that everybody's talking about that they don't know, I think it's all going to come down to electability. It always does. But even with Trump devotees, I think that, if it looked like he's not going to win, they'll jump.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one thing I'll clarify is you're exactly right on the Teflon status for him. In regards to Republicans. Republicans, I mean, some presidents kind of cross that line, the party line, and they become Teflon. Trump is, in the eyes of so many Republicans, he is just not a guy that they could ever look down upon, even if he's a smoking gun on the street. So there is that case. Bannon, let's talk about him really quick before we finish up. Yep. He clearly tried to get himself out of trouble by saying, now I can testify. Executive privilege has been waived, which it never was there in the first place. So this whole thing seems to be a joke. It seems like he was, he was surprised that the not obeying the subpoena, he's still going to face charges for that because that sticks. And now he's going in there and he thinks he thought for some reason he could dictate the terms of this, but yeah, they're tired. I think they're tired of Steve Bannon, and they're about to lay into him.
Well, there hasn't been a good judicial interpretation of the executive privilege on this issue. I'm not going to weigh in on whether it was valid or not, but the president was invoking it. Bannon said, "Well, if he's invoking it, I'm going to just let that play out." But Bannon is right in one respect. when we hold someone in contempt or try to hold them in contempt in order to compel them to do something, testify, for example, 95% of the time, the contempt citation goes away when the testimony starts. Mm-hmm. The contempt is simply there to compel testimony. I would suggest that you always could keep it over someone's head, but it usually does go away. It's not going away in the case of Bannon. Just pointing out the fact that he may have outsmarted himself, but it's not because he was on shaky legal ground. Now, the executive privilege part, that may have been more shaky, but the concept of I agree to testify, the committee will take it, but that does not automatically, as is proven here, eliminate the contempt proceeding.
But I mean, I thought that the Supreme Court had ruled, no, that you can't have executive privilege if there's investigating a crime. And clearly the storming of the U.S. Capitol is a crime. So I thought that they had already ruled.
It's not a criminal investigative body. The commission, this is where it's a little different. Grand jury might have been different.
But I thought that they did try to stop this for this committee, and the Supreme Court said we're not going to get in the way because Biden had waived the executive privilege. He said, I'm the executive. No one else is, and I'm not going to get in the way of this. And so
I don't think there's been litigation on the exact issue of when a president's privilege ends. Does it automatically end when the next guy takes the oath? Regardless, the point that you're making is Bannon thought that he could eliminate the criminal trial next week. And usually that's the case, but not so much here.
Speaking of Bannon, there was one point yesterday in the hearing that there was two calls made by Trump, and they pointed out that after he and Trump had talked, that Bannon was coming out with this storm the Capitol talking points sort of thing on his show. And as a matter of fact, there have been a few people that have been putting out the talking points that Bannon was using. It clearly is – this is – he's part of this as well. Like you said, Bannon's going to have to fall on a sword. I just don't see how if this does go down the path of prosecution, how he avoids going to court at least as well.
Well, the problem with Bannon and to some degree who's the other one who just got cuffed and stuffed? I can't remember now.
Not Eastman. Who was the other guy? The guy that wanted to be the AG, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, no, I'm talking about he was the Navarro.
Navarro.
Here's the thing with both of them. They both talked so much on TV, on radio, yes, etc. The track record is very clear. It's not subject to interpretation like a 10-word tweet. And so they have a much more difficult time because Bannon did it every day on his show and Navarro was a guest. Navarro's still speaking, even though he's currently under indictment. As a lawyer, I would say this is not the best plan.
Navarro is another one. I think Donald Trump Jr. Ivanka might be able to wiggle out of it, and I don't think Eric did enough there, but Donald Trump Jr. could also be in trouble on this as well. Like I said, there's going to be a lot of swords, and do you think Trump's not going to get in the way of that sword for Eric Jr.? I can tell you that right now. So Jeff Stein, once again, joins us here. We'll post the Iowa Politics Report a little bit later on. Jeff, we'll talk to you next week. Thank you very much. For the folks in Madison, Waukesha, Milwaukee area, get ready for Devil's Radio next hour. We're back hour two in Minneapolis, St. Paul up next.